So I'm happy to welcome a mentor and a friend, Howard Rheingold, for a little conversation about the social media classroom, which we're using for the CP Squared Connected Futures workshop, and which I've been following with interest since Howard got the MacArthur grant to fund it?
Yes. It was an award, actually. The MacArthur has a digital media and learning program, and Haystack, which is all about humanities, arts, science, and technology advanced collaboratory, ran a competition, and I entered it and was one of the winners last year.
And you won to do what?
I won to create a platform, the social media classroom, or if you use it for other purposes, the social media collaboratory, a browser-based, free and open software, uniform user interface for enabling a group to use a variety of social media, forums, wikis, blogs, chat, social bookmarking, and soon to come RSS and microblogging all in the same place. And in addition to the platform, a set of curriculum materials for other teachers about how to use social media in education, and particularly about the thing that I know most about, which is how do we use social media to teach young people about the issues that their and our use of online media simulate. You know,
so is that sort of a meta layer of media literacy?
Yes, very much. I think, well, this all came from when I started to teach about 5 years ago. I had bought this kind of mythology of the digital natives being, you know, mysteriously adept at all new media, and they do carry laptops and phones and are constantly using them. And my daughter is 24, and so I assumed that the students I addressed on my first day of class were like these digital natives, like my daughter and all her friends, and we're pretty savvy. And when I said the syllabus is a wiki and I expect you to edit it, and and I would like you to start blogging this week, I got these blank looks. And, you know, I think there's another issue there of all the students looking at their laptops that sort of breaks the main feedback loop for a teacher is you see whether the students are following you or whether you've lost them or whether they're giving you the blank look of, I don't know what he's talking about. So I started social media of different kinds to teach them in practice what we were talking about in theory. So I got I used the caucus-based forum that Charles Roth and Bill Bruck had put together for Q2 Learning. I used a social text wiki. Excuse me. I used a Drupal-based blogging platform. And my students, who I encouraged to give me candid feedback, said that they were overwhelmed, that not only were they learning to do new things while they were doing their readings and writing their papers, they were also blogging and posting in forums and chatting and social bookmarking. But each of these applications had a different sign-in and a different user interface, and that added to their confusion. So I experimented enough with Drupal to know that it's free, and if you have access to a server, which is increasingly inexpensive these days, you can do what cost a lot of money back in the old days. You know, when the Well started in 1985 with a really kind of puny conferencing system, PicoSpan, they required a $250,000 computer and modem banks and a whole bunch of stuff that really took social media out of the realm of the teacher. Nowadays, you can put all this stuff together for free. It's an incredibly miraculous, but it requires a sufficient amount of expertise that it's not really appropriate, I think, for all of the educators who would like to use these tools, but are not geeky. So that was the premise behind my application, that I would work with a developer, Sam Rose, to develop this platform out of Drupal that would be available for download or in a hosted version, and also develop a set of syllabuses and syllabi and lesson plans and videos and how-tos to help other teachers. Because my reaction was, these students live online, but they don't know what they're doing, and nobody is teaching them. And there's a limit to what they can teach each other, and our institutions aren't preparing them for it. So instead of getting into school reform and trying to change the agenda of educational institutions, I thought I would do what I know, which is to help bring the kind of tools that I know are useful to those teachers, and there are many of them out there, who are experimenting with these new literacies.
So there's two things here that really stick out for me, and that I see apply across into our domain of communities, and particularly communities of practice. And one is this idea of geekiness or not, which I also think is one of those tricky things, like digital natives or not, and the importance of integration as a way for people to be able to experiment. So, and I hear you saying this idea of integrating into a platform is key to bringing people together and moving forward together, but also key for making it easy.
Yes, and I think, with a caveat, I think the great power of the ecology of Web 2.0 apps is, as you see Mike Wesch do, you can get an aggregator like NetVibes and PageFlakes, and in a few minutes, you can drag Amiibo chat room in, you can put a forum in, you can get RSS feeds, and you've got a free on-the-go platform. But before then, you need to become familiar with the rhetorics of these different media and how to use them. So I think of it as a kind of an on-ramp to Web 2.0. I think it's important, given the different ways of thinking and communicating that each of these different media afford, and the different ways of doing things like studying in school that the media afford as well, that it's just adding complications to have people roll their own. I think ultimately, though, the kind of literacy, the kind of fluency that comes from understanding how to do this ought to equip people to be able to use, to kind of mix and match apps out there. But yes, you're right, you've identified it. Reducing complexity is really important for beginners, because you look at a platform and it's like trying to learn Final Cut Pro. It's like trying to fly a 747. You've got 1,400 knobs and dials in front of you, and you don't know what an expert knows, which is you only have to pay attention to one or two at a time. So reducing complexity, I think, is very important in introducing people to social media.
Well, reducing complexity so that eventually you can actually use complexity.
Yes, that's right. You add it as you become familiar. You add applications, or you add uses of applications. So, as you know, something like Caucus, we based our forum module on Caucus, which is a powerful platform that you and I have used for many years. There's a lot to do with it, but you want to start out with how do I find my way through this? How do I read it? How do I post? How do I keep track of things? And then you add there's both levels of technical complexity, and there's a kind of rhetoric. There's an art to, well, what kind of containers do I want to create? What kind of forums and sub-forums? And what kind of discussion topics do I want to create? And how do I create these forums and discussion topics in a way that's going to foster participation? All of those arts, I think, are really premised on losing that kind of sense of confusion and fear that you get when you're in an environment that looks overwhelming and you don't know what to pay attention to and what not to pay attention to.
So you just talked about one of my favorite intersections, which is that place between the design of the technology and its use in practice. the decision about when to start a new discussion, the decision about why you choose a linear discussion forum versus a threaded discussion forum. What have you learned about talking about those issues with people?
I've learned to take it a step at a time. That that people are very capable of building a hierarchy of abstractions, but only if you start with the lower level and then build on that and then build on that. If you throw them all at them at once, then they're confused. There are a number of just simply technical literacies. How do you find your way through a forum? How do you put links in a blog post? How do you participate in a chat? Once you know those things, then you can begin talking about the rhetoric or the art of it. And so I think it's simply a stage at a time. And I think what's also exciting but also complicating is that these are not individual literacies. As I explained to students, a blog post is about individual voice. And it's good if you can get others to interact and comment on your blog post. But you're the one who composes it. It's an individual point of view of some kind. And there are a number of different forms of blog rhetoric that I teach. But a forum is about a group having a discussion about the same thing. So you're aiming to create something that's greater than the sum of your individual contributions. You interact in some way with what others have said before you, and you try to build on that. So those are, that's kind of the intellectual social level. Once you get past the basic literacy of how do I use the medium, then you can get to how do I use the medium effectively. And I think that all of these are nested. It's somewhat confusing to teachers who want to use this stuff. They know that it affords a flatter kind of more lateral participation, more collaborative, more inquiry-based pedagogy. They want the students to be more actively engaged, and they see these media as helping them do that. But you can't throw that all at them at once. You have to start with them being comfortable with being in this new world, and then start step by step. And so I guess it's a little bit like going to a foreign country. You first need to learn how to ask, how do I get to my hotel? And then you understand the niceties of what you do and you don't say to a waiter.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then that also opens up eventually the opportunity for invention and creativity and appropriation by individuals and groups in a way that's unique to their needs at that point. There's those building blocks are really the key. That absolutely resonates with my experience.
So, you and I are among the few who have had that experience, and I think that right now our challenge is to try to enlist others in understanding how to learn and teach using these media.
That's worth it.
Well, it's absolutely essential, I think. We've got these students who are learning reading, writing, and arithmetic, and they're spending 8 hours a day online, and they're not learning anything in their formal schooling about being online. And again, if you go to the nonprofit world or you go to the medical world, they are all undergoing some kind of transformation because of the use of online media. But how to learn to do that as an individual or as a community or as an institution seems to be happening haphazardly. Our institutions for acculturating people to new ways of doing things are changing much more slowly than the new ways of doing things are coming along.
Well, I would absolutely agree with that. And in seeing when we bring an online collaborative tool, for example, to an international development organization, what it does is it fundamentally questions how they have done collaboration in general. And so if you cannot give them an entree to do that collaboration successfully and understand why, then you can't even begin to hope to change the organizational dynamic. But if you can show it at this micro level, I am starting to see some organizational change. It's been slow, but there is an increase.
Yes, and that's, you know, that's really what I'm aiming at. I think that the point of leverage is that there are a lot of people in the education world, in the nonprofit world, in government, who see the power of what they're calling social media these days. I mean, it was just a few years ago, it was social software, and you remember
there'll be something else tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, but you know, I think the characteristics are the same. It's the availability of new kinds of communication media that afford new kinds of communication that are essentially many-to-many communication. As these become available, more people see the value in it. So what you and I think are involved in are helping train the people who will train the people who will begin spreading this knowledge around. If it's not going to be part of the regular school curriculum, then we have to kind of be like water and flow around those institutions. And it's not rocket science. It's just unknown to people.
Or it's never been framed that way. John has a question. Wanted to jump in.
I have a question about this whole notion of training as a front-loading activity. And it applies both to training people in this intense front-loading way about, say, the social media classroom, but also applying that kind of technology to the whole enterprise of front-loading training of young people. And, you know, it seems like the virtue of some of these media is that it can support engagement over the longer term.
I'm sorry. Can you?
So my question is, I guess, two part. One is, do you see some kind of ongoing community around the SMC, around this whole enterprise of developing literacy? And the other thing is a question about reexamining, you know, the role of these media in education, where education may very well be transformed as well.
Yeah. You know, I haven't really talked about that latter question, which is to me the most exciting part, which is when I started using these media, the way the students started reacting to it has pushed me further and further towards a kind of constructivist, project-based, student-centric, inquiry-based, collaborative pedagogy. Now, this is nothing new. It goes back to John Dewey, Neil Postman, Paulo Freire. I didn't know about any of these people. I just, my usual method of operation is to stumble on something and then begin inquiring, which is what I'm trying to teach students to do. I learned how to inquire, and that's kind of, with that kind of bootstrapping tool, then you can pretty much put everything else together. But there's a very different power relationship in a classroom between the teacher as authority stands up and lectures, the students sit in rows and take notes, and then they regurgitate them for tests. And I'm sure that is a valid model. If you're going to be a neurosurgeon, you probably need to learn the nerves of the face that way. But I think in a whole lot of territory, specifically including the stuff that I'm teaching, where there really is no canon, there, I think having the arguments and inquiries about what do our use of these media mean for us as individuals and relationships and societies? The issue is not to get a set of facts into the students' heads, but to awaken them to begin inquiring and giving them some tools, some vocabulary, some analytic frameworks for making those inquiries, not just in the class, but afterwards. And this is a big shift that others have spoken about. Mike Wesch, with his videos, has done a great job of doing that. And it's a shift that awakens a lot of students. Once they get over the, this is not going to be on the test, this is up to me business, they wake up and get quite excited about it. So I'm very interested in that shift in pedagogy that the use of these technologies can afford. I'm sorry, what was the first part of the question again?
Well,
communities.
Yeah.
Well, you know, part of what I promised with this award was to initiate a community of practice, and as you and Nancy know as well as I do, you can start a community, but that doesn't guarantee that people are going to make it come to life.
Yeah.
So what I've been trying to do is to create a place, attend to it, invite people, where people who are using the social media classroom, or even if they're not using the social media classroom, but they're interested in the use of many-to-many media, digital media, multiple media, and pedagogy, can come to discuss that. And so we're going through the life cycle of any such community of practice. There was initially a great deal of interest, a lot of action, and that has kind of faded away to less frequent action. And now that we're offering a hosted solution that enables people who don't have a server or the IT skills to install the software themselves to use our server and allow us to host it, we're beginning to have a community of people who are using the platform. Of course, by the time we got all of this together, we thought we would have the hosted platform available in November, and it took until March to get that going. The semester's over, so I expect that come fall we will see, or we won't see, an influx of people into that community. But aside from the community of practice that I started around the use of the social media classroom, the educators all over the world who are excited about the subjects we're discussing, not just the media, but the pedagogy and the need for it today, considering the ubiquity of these media in our lives and the social changes that they seem to be triggering, people are finding each other through a lot of different ways. Certainly Twitter has been a great way for me to get in touch with other people in the community. YouTube, Mike Wesch's videos excited me a lot, and I made the effort to contact him. And you know, when you're out there on the bleeding edge, it helps to talk with someone who's done it and who's done it well. So I think we're all finding connections with each other. Right now, I'd call it more of a network than a community.
Great. Thanks. That's great. Appreciate that.
I've got a few more minutes. You have another question, Nancy? Have we lost Nancy?
I don't think so.
No, Nancy just had herself on mute because the dog was barking. You know, like in this multimedia work anywhere thing, it's been very interesting to see how people have become much more forgiving of a non-sterile environment, which I love, but sometimes I forget to unmute myself. I think my final question would be, what are the questions you're most wondering about in the use of this media of people learning together?
Well, one of them has to do with the deployment of attention. What are the different probes and exercises that I can use in the classroom that would encourage mindfulness among the students about their use of the laptop and the internet and their mobile phones during class and elsewhere? So that's something I am learning by experimentation with, asking the students to turn their laptops off for a while, asking the students to have three students take notes for everyone else, asking a class of 45 students to have only five laptops open at any one point, and it's up to them to decide that. I'm looking for all kinds of probes that just get them to be more mindful about how they're using it. So that's important. Assessment is another issue that it's both part of learning and it's part of what institutions require. There's just a different kind of assessment when you have a lot of collaboration. How do you assess collaborations? There's always a slacker, and there's always people who carry more than their own weight. So I'm looking into peer assessment and ways that there can be some kind of hybrid of my assessment and feedback and their assessment. I'm asking students on the first day of class, and I'm saying none of us rushes home at 7 o'clock on Tuesday nights to watch our favorite television show. We just TiVo it. Why are we here at 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoons together in this classroom? I can and do put my lectures on YouTube. We have forums and blogs and wikis so that we can communicate about the texts all week long. Why are we here in this classroom together at this time? So I think that's a challenge. And what I'm starting to try to learn is dialogue. So, the kind of thing you see in a great open space technology session, kind of thing that you see in the World Cafe, where you don't have a script, but dialogue about the issue unfolds. So that's exciting when it happens. It's a risk to do it. You know, the teaching model is, the business model for teaching is you spend 90% of your work creating a syllabus and a lesson plan and lectures, and that's the first year. And the second year, it's only about 75% of the amount of work is the first year. And then for the next 30 years, you pretty much coast on it. This is different. You walk into the classroom every day thinking and hoping something new is going to happen, and you don't have a plan for it. You're going to deal with it. And it's not going to happen unless you're open to it. And that's scary. It's scary for me. I'm a dilettante. I'm not a tenured track faculty member. I'm in there teaching because I think that's the next thing to do in regard to my career with social media. So I have maybe less fear than others, but still, it's pretty frightening. You're walking into a classroom every week with a bunch of people who paid good money and expect to learn from you, and you're going to go in there and be silent to leave the space for them to start talking. You know, that can flop in a big way, and you can look like a big slacker. Or they can take up the challenge, and exciting things happen. So attention and dialogue is what I would boil that down to, what I'm really interested in learning these days.
I see. The latter one reminds me of my lifelong, always need to learn how to better, which is how to ask a great question. When you ask a great question, everything comes.
Yes, how to get them to ask the great questions.
That
was, you know, when I saw these students were institutionalized to the point of the chairs would be stacked in an empty room, and they would come into the room and put the chairs in rows and columns without prompting and sit in the same place they sat last week without even thinking about it. I thought, okay, some deprogramming is in order here. And that's what led me to read, just from the title, Neil Postman's book, Teaching as a Subversive Activity. And the first page of the book, he said, the purpose of education is not to get students to give the right answers, but to get students to ask the right questions. Yeah. And boy, the light bulb went on for me there. So I think if I can get the students to ask the right questions, then that will be success.
Well,
so Nancy,
you know,
I'm afraid that I have to run off to school right now.
You've got to run to school. We want to thank you for hosting us.
If you have further questions, maybe I can answer via email.
Great. We wanted to thank you for hosting us on the Social Media Classroom. We'll be sharing this audio not this week, not next week, but the week after. And I'll send you an invitation to the discussion thread, or we can handle it by email and I'll repost it, whichever is easy because I know you're traveling. But we really appreciate the chance to hear some of your thinking, and me particularly because you were my first teacher. And, you know, what you taught me at Electric Minds really has been a foundation for what I've done and carried a lot of that.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm sure you have a lot to teach me at this point, and I would love to have an opportunity to learn from you. Do prompt me about that, and I will participate in the discussion to the degree that I can. Now, we have, if you're interested, we have installed Kaltura video comments on the Community of Practice. Maybe we could think about installing it on your instance of, why don't you ask Sam whether that's possible?
I will, that's a great idea.
Prompt me and I will participate to the degree that my travels enable me to.
Fabulous. Have a good travels.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
Okay, I've stopped the recording. You still there, John?